Latinos in Nevada are struggling to keep up with whites and African Americans. They are lagging in educational achievement, economic well-being, and business development. These findings are all in a new report from the Gwynne Center for Policy Priorities. And Latinos in Nevada are not only falling behind other groups in this state, but they are worse off, far worse off, than Latinos in other Intermountain West states. That prompts questions. What are the biggest challenges for Latinos here in Nevada? What role should government play? Is there a role for private industry? And how does that lag affect the rest of us? Joining us now is Nancy Bruhn, Executive Director of the Kenny Gwynne Center for Policy Priorities. Nancy Bruhn, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Also with us on the line from Reno is Minority Leader of the Nevada Assembly, Republican from District 25 in Washoe County, Pat Hickey. Assemblyman Hickey, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning,
everyone.
Nancy Bruhn, the report covers a wide range of topics, but how would you summarize what the State of Latinos report actually says about the Latino community in the Southwest, especially in Nevada?
Well, let me answer that by taking a minute to just sort of explain the motivation and the background behind the report. So the Kenny Gwynne Center for Policy Priorities is a new statewide bipartisan think tank, and our goal is to inform the debate by providing independent analysis. And so what our areas of focus are economic development, higher education, and tax and fiscal policies. And so there was a lot of talk last year about sort of the growing size of the Latino population here in Nevada and the political importance. And thinking about these demographic shifts and fiscal impacts, we thought, well, let's look at how Latinos are doing, because if they're not doing well, there is sort of obviously a fiscal impact on the other side. And we looked at Latinos for before the Great Recession and then what had happened afterward. And interestingly, before the Great Recession, Latinos in Nevada were actually doing quite well. We had the lowest of all the states in the Intermountain West, which we defined as California, Utah, Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas. We had the Latinos had the lowest poverty rate, the lowest food stamp and cash assistance usage rates, and the highest per capita income for Latinos in the Intermountain West. So Latinos in Nevada were doing really well. And then, boom, we had this big economic shock with the recession. And there were some disturbing trends revealed from the economic shock.
Yeah, this has been a 180, hasn't
yeah.
it? I mean, it's just a complete inversion of the way things were before the start of the Great Recession. So
right.
How serious are the issues facing Latinos today?
Well, we've got some of the highest poverty rates still, the highest, biggest increases in cash assistance and SNAP benefits, biggest increases in the usage. And so it's real for us, it was a sign that the sort of what we call the infrastructure of opportunity here is pretty weak for Latinos. And as a result, we see these, you know, low outcomes with respect to education, business development, and housing.
In talking about the program a little bit earlier this morning, it mentioned something about the construction industry, mm-hmm. that it simply is not what it was at the beginning of the Great Recession. Nevertheless, surely the construction industry alone is not to blame. And I'm wondering what's unique about Latinos here compared to Latinos living in California and Arizona and New Mexico. Why are they struggling more here?
Well, right now, Latinos are concentrated in sort of lower wage industries, accommodation, gaming. And in other states, they actually are concentrated in the higher wage paying industries, including retail and healthcare. And so that's sort of a benefit. You know, we can think about another benefit of economic diversification of the state is that it does inject a greater amount of economic resiliency. So, for example, people always talk about Texas and how diverse the economy is. Well, one of the benefits of having a really diverse economy is when you do have this economic shock, there's more resiliency in the system. And so it's easier for people to sort of shift industries, look for other jobs, you know, sort of get a new certificate and much more easily find jobs. So, and here we're just not as diverse. And so that we're missing that economic resiliency.
Am I hearing, at least indirectly, what you're saying, am I hearing that the fact that this is entertainment, hospitality, tourism and such, the fact that we have hitched our wagon to that particular star, is that a big factor in this as well?
Definitely. Definitely. There are some bright lights. What we found interesting is that Latinos are overrepresented overrepresented in advanced or in manufacturing, and those jobs actually pay higher than the average wage across all industries here in Nevada. So there's a big push to really focus on manufacturing here in Nevada, and that would actually be great, a great opportunity for Latinos in improving income and job security.
Okay, so the report obviously is outlining the problems facing Latinos in Nevada. How does that impact the rest of us? Whites, African Americans, Asians, et cetera, the rest of us who live in this area?
Well, so Latinos comprise 27% of Nevada's population. So with a population that big and growing, any sort of, you know, negative outcome, negative fiscal impact, sort of negative educational outcomes make the state overall less attractive.
So. We are talking about the recent Gwin Center report, State of Latinos in the Intermountain West. And with us is Nancy Bruin. She's the executive director for the Kenny Gwin Center for Policy Priorities. And I want to turn now to Assemblyman Pat Hickey. Assemblyman, you've had a chance to look at the report, and it likely is not telling you anything new. But as a lawmaker, how do you view these challenges to education and business and labor for this particular group of people living in Nevada?
Well, first of all, I haven't read the report extensively, but I'm very happy to see the Gwin Center appear on the scene and provide lawmakers and opinion leaders and others with the kind of data-driven reports and white papers, et cetera, that we've gotten. One of the things that I did glean from it, and it's been touched upon, is that Nevada has the highest percentage of undocumented immigrants in the region of those southwestern states that were mentioned, and also the highest percentage of undocumented immigrants in the labor force itself.
So, Assemblyman, if I can stop you there.
Yeah.
With those high percentages and such, given the nature of the economy here, the enormously high unemployment rate compared to everybody else, why do you think that continues to be the case?
Well, it was mentioned that Latinos are seemingly doing better in Texas and California. And while I'm far from being an expert on the subject, my guess would be that you've had generations of Latinos in both of those states, especially, and certainly in Nevada to a lesser degree. And I think the longer that folks have been here from whatever background, they probably do ascend to higher levels of education and thus employment. But it's particularly troublesome in Nevada, and the construction industry played a huge role in knocking the floor out of the economy, and especially those that were on, as Nancy said, the lower end of the economic spectrum.
Yeah, and as Nancy also said, it is in California and in other surrounding states a more diverse economy, which would surely have an impact on the percentage of undocumented immigrants.
Well, we're improving on that score. In terms of the diversification, I was happy to hear that they're doing well, better in manufacturing, and certainly Nevada and northern Nevada and sectors in the south are improving in that. And if we see the advent of some of the new companies related to technology and the drone industry and the car industry, should it ever happen in Nevada, that could be a good sign for all of us.
Mm-hmm. As a lawmaker, Pat Hickey, why is it important sometimes to break down communities by ethnicity or race? Or do you think that in some circumstances that can be a big mistake?
Well, I mean, personally, I don't prefer that we do that. I mean, we have to look at data, and we have to be realistic. And of course, one of the things we did last session was to improve funding for early language learners, and for obvious reasons, and that is particularly targeted at communities not exclusively Latino, but largely so, that need help in order to be successful in school. So you have to deal in reality, but still we are policymakers and state lawmakers, and the things that we do, we have to make sure are balanced, and we're not tilting in order to solve one problem and at the same time create others and inequities and other populations, if you will, although, again, I don't like to tend to look at things in that way as a policymaker.
Nancy Bruin, I wanted to ask you about a couple of the issues that the report raises, beginning with education. One of the points of the report is that in Nevada, long-term English language learners in middle school tend to face significant challenges achieving reading proficiency. What's the underlying problem in there? Why are we having so much trouble bringing these children's language skills up to standard?
Well, I think if you look at the curriculum in the school districts, most of the focus on literacy and, you know, reading by three really does focus on elementary schools. And so I think there's maybe assumption that hopefully, you know, kids are reading by the time they, you know, get to middle school. And so there's a black hole. You don't have the programming and the funds being dedicated to literacy and improving reading proficiency and outcomes in the middle school. So I think we just haven't paid enough attention. I think also we do have, you know, as Assemblyman Hickey said, we do have maybe a relatively younger immigrant population here. So some of them are coming into the middle school system, recently arrived in the middle schools and not starting here as young kids. And so I think compared to other states, that's become a huge problem here.
So
what, I think the strategy is to really sort of look at the resources and the programs that are in middle school available to help these kids move forward.
What does that mean for us? Does it mean more Spanish-speaking teachers or more of a focus on Spanish-speaking teachers in middle school? What's the underlying solution?
Well, in our paper, we recommend that we just have more bilingual teachers and counselors in all of the schools and throughout the K-12 system, but certainly in middle schools as well.
Now, also with us is Andres Ramirez, president of the Ramirez Group. Andres, great to have you back with us. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So if you would give a little insight into this, too. Why do kids struggle to pick up English? And what's the solution to this? Nancy Bruhn's talking about the problem really becoming evident in middle school. How do we solve that?
So I think that if there was an easy answer there, we wouldn't be continuing to have this problem. I think that there are structural and cultural barriers and problems that need to be looked at, which is why reports such as this that Dr. Bruhn put together are so important and insightful for us. But you have a combination of factors that come in. Our school district has kids coming in at different points in age ranges. So with children entering our school district in middle school who's in, you know, a limited English speaker, it's going to be harder for them to pick up the language coming in at that age, especially while at Clark County School District we don't have a robust ELL program to help our students.
So what is the community's responsibility with all this, Andres?
A combination of things. You know, parents need to take a greater role in understanding what it takes to succeed in the school districts here in the United States and in Clark County. There needs to be better partnership programs established between the school district and parents and community leaders so that they understand. Oftentimes, you know, families here come from other parts of the countries that have dramatically different types of school districts, or they come from other countries in which the school system is entirely different altogether. So understanding basic concepts of what is expected of students here and what it takes to succeed is important. We meet parents often who don't even understand what the letter grades mean of an A, a B, a C, or D, or an F. And so they have no idea of how to read a report card, what those metrics means, or what is expected of their students to succeed. So that's a portion of our community taking greater responsibility ourselves of how our kids are performing, but also of making sure that the school district is providing competent and qualified and sufficient personnel in the classrooms who know how to properly teach the students to succeed in these environments.
Assemblyman Pat Hickey, according to the National Center for Education Statistics, about 10% of public school students nationwide are ELLs. That's not necessarily all Latino, but the report goes on to say this will continue to rise, especially in our region. How would you describe the attitude of lawmakers over the issue, which is obviously, again, bigger here in Clark County?
Well, I think there's a growing recognition that's we're all on the hook for this challenge as Nevadans, and so I think there is a growing recognition, as evidenced by increased funding for Zoom schools and intensive ELL programs that was reflected in not only the governor's original budget last time, but monies, frankly, that were added on by the legislature, you know, before the conclusion of the session, and I think that will be a trend that will continue to take place. And you know, I just want to say I'm very happy to hear Ramirez or Andres, you know, emphasize the role of families in all of this, and that's for all of us in every background, because you know, studies also show that family background is the most important predictor of academic success. So, engaging parents as well as the students in early ages in the classroom is going to ultimately lend itself to greater success.
Mm-hmm. So, Nancy Brune, you heard Andres talking about family, the need for more family involvement. You heard Assemblyman Hickey saying, yeah, bravo, absolutely, right on. So how do we do that? How do we actively get more families involved in terms of getting their kids educated and getting them ready for the workforce?
Well, I think that speaks to the role primarily of community groups in large part. There already are a number of community groups. The Public Education Foundation, for example, has workshops where they're training Latina mothers to become more active, to understand how the school system works so they can be more engaged in their children's lives. There are other community groups that are trying to work on this parental engagement piece. And I also think there is a role for the school districts around the state to play in just, you know, making sure that there are culturally sensitive bilingual administrators in each school. So, for example, in a lot of schools here in Clark County, at least, with heavy or high ELL populations, when you walk into the front office, there isn't someone in the front office that speaks Spanish or, you know, maybe understands some of the challenges those families face. And so, just, you know, if Clark County School District can just ensure that when they hire a front office person, that person is bilingual, then that could also make it could reduce barriers and thus allow families to feel like, you know, that the school is theirs, that they can go in and talk to folks about their children's academic lives.
We are talking about the state of Latinos in the Intermountain West. That is the title of a new report from the Kenny Gwynn Center for Policy Priorities. It points in Nevada struggling in many areas more so than other Latinos in the Southwest. And among its points, Latinos in Nevada are struggling in many areas and have been in recent years since the beginning of the Great Recession. And they are struggling more than Latinos in surrounding states and certainly more than whites and African Americans in a lot of fields, including things like educational achievement and economic well-being. One of the people who's with us talking about this report is the executive director of the Gwynn Center, Nancy Brune. Nancy Brune, I want to turn to one other issue within the report, which is improving workforce development and training, as well as fostering a better environment for Latino business owners. In a nutshell, how do you explain this part of the report? What does this part of the report say?
Well, there are gaps in providing sort of effective workforce development and job training. And a lot of these strategies would just, you know, are common sense, wouldn't require necessarily new funds. But it's just trying to, how does government or how can we make some of these programs work better, more efficiently, so that Latinos can access jobs and enter the workforce and become, you know, have more economic security. And so, for example, in talking to some folks who provide service or training, you know, they were mentioning that, you know, we people come in and they get a certificate. Latinos come in and they get a certificate, and a lot of times they're not as proficient in the English language. And so we send them off to a sort of general English language acquisition course. Why aren't we providing on-site English in that technical area? So kind of an integrated bilingual curriculum. So if you're getting a healthcare certificate or learning about solar energy, why aren't we then sort of providing that English class that uses those terms?
Okay, so what's in the recipe for effective workforce development? I mean, you're talking about this having, in effect, having bilingual, more bilingual capability. What else is in the recipe here?
Well, in Nevada, I think also one way of doing it better would be to really focus in the P-20 pipeline on STEM education. We have huge gaps in the number of Latinos taking science, advanced high school science and math courses, and a lot of the jobs that are projected to come in Nevada require a STEM background. And so we need to start early exposing Latinos and all of our kids to STEM training, STEM education, and making sure that, you know, a lot of the job training programs are also doing STEM work.
Mm-hmm. Andres Ramirez, almost 35% of Latinos nationally live at or near the minimum wage. And this links to part of the Gwynn research that shows Latinos in general are underrepresented in high-paying jobs. That can be traced back to early education. Within this community, how would you describe the attitude about the future and of helping the idea of helping each generation to do better? Andres, are you with us?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Dave. I'm here.
Okay. Well, let me re-ask the question. Given a little over a third of Latinos nationally at near the minimum wage, how would you describe the attitude that Latinos have here and elsewhere in the country about the future and about the idea of helping each generation to do better?
Well, I think that is a fundamental component of the Latino culture and parenting. Much of the immigrants who came to this country from Central and South America came here specifically on the premises that they wanted to provide their children and their grandchildren a better future and a better opportunity than existed for them where they lived. And those that are here, many of them in low to middle incomes, constantly work, you know, either two jobs or three jobs to improve their economic positions or to provide greater opportunities for their children and their grandchildren so that they don't have to struggle the way they did. And so in terms of opportunities and cultural, attitudes towards this, there's a huge priority and preference put by parents and grandparents of Latino families in this country to work harder to provide a greater opportunity, a greater future for the generations to come.
Now, something like a quarter of Latino population in Southern Nevada had some direct ties to the construction industry, and the second largest job market for the population was service jobs. So where, Andres, are we failing to boost job opportunities with training for newer and better jobs?
Well, I think that's a community-wide problem we have as a whole. We live in a community here in Las Vegas in the state that's largely reliant and has been dominant for so many decades on a single industry, which is tourism. We've slowly begun to change that with some other industries that have been bobbing up. You know, more recently, we have a tech sector that's thriving now and other areas. But all in all, the dominant employer here is still the tourism industry that's creating jobs and employing people. And so while those jobs continue to rely on lower-level and entry-level sector jobs, those are the employments that people are going to be looking for. And so when we're looking at transitioning, instead of just focusing on unemployment programs and so forth, and we've had this discussion before, the Brookings Institute is working on whether providing local control to community colleges and how do we enable our community colleges to better adapt to the community and provide the type of job training and transition skills that are needed to help people recover and adapt in these communities.
So when you talk about job training or retraining and adapting and such, I guess I kind of find myself circling back to what Nancy Brunet said about the need to offer more STEM classes for Latinos as part of the education system. So how do we get this blue-collar workforce educated enough for the jobs that are likely to be here in succeeding generations?
Well, one, we have to train them, as you just mentioned. We as a community and we as America have always found a way to adapt and move forward in this globalized economy that exists. It's one of the great things about American ingenuity. And over the past few decades, we've kind of lost sight of that, and we haven't placed our focus and priority on ensuring that our workers and that our communities are preparing themselves to adapt to the growing changes in the marketplace and in technology. Mm-hmm. And so rather than continuing to hold on and focus on a lot of these industries and jobs that we know may be phased out, we need to, one, continue to do those jobs well and make sure we hold on to them while we can, but begin to also train employees for what that next great paying job is going to be so that we can continue to grow the middle class, provide people an opportunity to support their families, and continue to live the American dream.
So, Assemblyman Pat Hickey, what, if anything, can Nevada's government do to fix this dilemma facing blue-collar workers to help them adapt to the future? Assemblyman Hickey, are you still with us? Okay, it appears we lost Assemblyman Hickey. We'll try to get him back in just a few moments. Now, Nancy Brune, turning to you, the report does look at possible solutions. You spoke earlier of offering more STEM opportunities. The Gwynn Center looks at improving secondary education, making college more affordable, among other things. What are you telling policymakers is the best way to improve the performance of Latinos in science and engineering tracks?
Well, just taking a step back, I think to go back to your earlier question, I think what we can do first and foremost, just to improve sort of job outlook and opportunity for Latinos and for everybody, is to improve the college graduation rate. Right now, Latinos between the age of 18 to 24 represent about 35% of the population. We only, or Latinos account for 13% of college degree holders, whether it be a two-year or a four-year college. And that, so that includes CSN or Truckee Meadows. And so if we can just think about how to make those programs better or more effective in keeping our students in the two-year and four-year degree programs, I think that is a, will go huge or really far in terms of just helping them get those jobs that pay more in these STEM careers.
All right. Assemblyman Hickey, are you back with us?
I am.
Oh, great. And sorry about that lost connection, but thank you. So what can government do, at least at the state level, to help to kind of fix this dilemma facing blue-collar Latinos? This thing Nancy was saying about the percentages not matching between population and percentage of Latinos with college degrees.
Well, I because I was cut off, I didn't hear the conversation, but let me take a stab at it regardless. What government can do, I'm of the mindset that government can't do as much as we would like it to do, and yet we have a responsibility as citizens and those who represent citizens within government. And so, yes, we need to do things. College and career ready is extremely important. I mean, one of the things that I would like to see more of, and it ties into what was mentioned earlier with respect to the possibilities for greater manufacturing jobs in the United States for all folks who choose to fill those positions, are career and technical academies in high schools and their tie-ins to the community college base are vitally important. I mean, I just met with folks in the mining industry yesterday, very high-paying jobs for folks that can qualify and get those sort of certificates and not meaning necessarily four-year degrees. So there are many opportunities, but then again, you know, persons have to be successful, and going back to your discussion on middle school, I think from what I've learned on the various education committees I serve on, is that students, if they're not successful by the third grade in mastering English, they're going to present problems in middle and high school, and then obviously not be qualified or geared for success at the community college level, and that's why we have so many remedial programs. So early education is vital, and that's where we're focused on, and that's where the community and families and organizations and government need to be focused on, and I think we are.
Yeah, so does that bring us around kind of full circle to conversations in the halls in Carson City next year saying, yeah, we've got these great potential programs, all we have to do is come up with the money to pay for them?
Well, that's the $64,000, and it'll be a lot
more than
higher
that.
Price tag than that question, of course, because we've identified all kinds of areas, whether it be in the mental health area, certainly in education funding, which most of us would agree ought to be priority number one, but then there's infrastructure and economic development. So huge things. We'd all like to grow the pie. As a Republican, I always, of course, I'm going to say things like, gee, when the economy grows, the pie does get larger, as it did last session, and we had more money to spend. With respect to the taxing question, that's probably for another program.
Probably is, but do you fear that I may be asking you and Nancy and Andres these same questions 2 years hence?
I think you're going to see that there's progress. I've certainly heard, for the STEM programs and the ELL, and we obviously want to see, you know, how they are going and ought to look at the data before just making rosy predictions. But I think we're investing in the right areas and early language learning programs. I think that's vitally important.
Vitally important.
Those
indeed.
Kids to be successful. But there's other areas of our schools that have to improve as well for us to graduate folks from all backgrounds who can fill these jobs that are out there. So we have to raise the bar in a number of areas.
Assemblyman Pat Hickey is Minority Leader of the Nevada Assembly. He joined us on the phone from Reno. Andres Ramirez is President of the Ramirez Group, and Nancy Brune is the Executive Director of the Kenny Gwynn Center for Policy Priorities, which published this study. And you can link to that study, by the way, at knprnews.org. Thank you all very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Dave.